In the vegetable garden, it's harvest time. In the flower garden, the show is drawing to a close. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And for perennial gardeners, it's time to start thinking about next year. Our horticulture experts from Iowa State University, Richard Duran and Cindy Haynes, are here. And we're going to talk about perennials, how to divide plants, how to cut them back, and get them ready to weather the winter months to come. It's also time to think about early spring flowers. We'll be talking about bulbs today. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls about your yard or garden. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day. Join the conversation after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it's Friday. That means it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. For perennial gardeners, it's time to start thinking about next spring. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran is here along with Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture. Thank you both for being with us today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So if you have perennials in your yard or garden, what should you be thinking about right now, Cindy?
Well, besides the fact that we might actually have to water them again this week just to kind of keep them going and growing because it's actually been dry. Otherwise, things we're thinking about is are dividing some of those spring blooming perennials, especially if they've done well and they've kind of overgrown their space or maybe not blooming quite as well as they have in the past. This is a great time to do some division of different perennials in the landscape.
So you should divide plants that are doing well as those that aren't doing as well?
Well, those that are maybe doing so well that they're overtaking their space or maybe encroaching on others, so they're doing almost too well. Division is a great way to propagate them and kind of keep them a little smaller and maybe a little more contained. And division is also a great way to rejuvenate perennials that maybe aren't blooming quite as well or that are starting to die out in the center. This is pretty common for perennials that have been in one spot for a long time. So, and it really does help rejuvenate them and get that vigor back.
How does it rejuvenate them?
Usually when perennials start to die out in the center or when they start to grow and get larger, they have a tendency to almost crowd themselves out sometimes in the center. And you'll notice with like daylilies and some ornamental grasses that they start to yellow or turn brown sometimes in the center. And there's almost not enough space that they don't bloom quite as well. So sometimes the outer edges, you know, are blooming best or doing the best in the center is starting to not look as good.
What do you do when you divide a plant?
Well, when you divide a plant, it's the hardest part is actually digging it up. And I usually tell people to dig the whole thing up so that you can take a look at the root system. And after you've gotten the whole perennial out of the ground, then you cut it up. Most plants, I will tell you to try and see if there's any natural places where you can divide or separate the plants. If not, cut it like a piece of pie. Like pie wedges into, you know, 4, maybe 6 slices of pie. Especially with plants that have started to die out in the center, this makes sure that you have more of that outer, more vigorous edge and less of that kind of dying center. And then you basically put one of those wedges of pie back in, or divisions, back into the hole that was originally there, and then the rest you can plant other places or give to neighbors or friends, whatever the case may be.
That's a good time of year to check Craigslist if you're looking for free plants.
Right. It's a great thing. And when you're replanting, make sure that you replant it up at the same level that it was before. You don't want that to plant too deeply. If that division is too deeply, it'll rot. If it's too high, it might dry out. So replant it at the same level. Water it well because it will need some water, and then maybe mulch it and care for it a little bit this winter to make sure that it stays in the soil and water it again once again in the spring.
Do you need to be careful to do the division long enough before frost sets in that these plants have a time to get established?
Yeah, that's a good point. Ideally, you do need to make sure that you've got about a month for that root system to start to reestablish. And that's also why I mentioned mulching maybe later in the fall and into early winter, because some perennials maybe don't get so established and have that wonderful root system that they need that extra weight and protection that a good 2 to 3 inch layer of mulch can provide over the winter so they don't lift or heave.
As we start to think about frost setting in and as our mm-hmm. perennials start to dry out, what do we need to think about as far as preparing those plants for winter so that they will make it to next spring?
Things that you can think about besides division, maybe besides watering. The mulching is pretty important, I think, for perennials that were newly planted maybe this year, or those perennials that you know have a really shallow root system, which I think a lot of perennials, if they were planted this year, probably have a shallow root system because we've just had so much rain. They haven't needed to go deep as far as a root system.
And
so,
when you mulch a perennial, mm-hmm. what do you need to think about?
Think about after that first frost, when it kind of kills the tops and most of the foliage, coming back and then just maybe removing some of that dead foliage and then mounding a good 2 to 3 inches of a chip, wood chip or organic type of mulch on top. That'll help insulate it and prevents those freeze and thaw cycles that kind of happen sometimes in the fall and early spring from lifting that plant out of the soil because it doesn't have a really well-established root system.
Is there a way you can over-mulch? Is there anything you need to be careful of?
You can over-mulch. And I usually tell people if you're going to apply this mulch, wait until you've had a frost or two so that you know that growth is essentially ceased or stopped for most perennials at the end of the season. And yes, you can over-mulch. If you're going 6 inches or more, we're calling those mulch volcanoes. Sometimes you see them around trees, and they can cause more damage than necessary.
I've seen other people try to do things, particularly with roses and things like that, to wrap them in plastic and
right.
things like that. What do you need to do, and does that work?
Yeah, and roses are a totally different thing. Yes, it can work. A lot of the hybrid tea roses are not reliably hardy in Iowa, so we do need to have some extra protection efforts for them. Usually in November, we start with those by mounding actually about a foot of soil at the base of the plant, and then adding to that probably another foot or 2 foot of mulch or straw on top of it. So we're really protecting that, that 1 to 2 feet of the base of the plant with not only mulch, but with some soil or compost as well. So a little more intensive to protect those hybrid tea roses. Some people will also use those rose cones that you might see. And that requires pruning and still mounding of the soil and then putting the rose cone on top of that and then mounding more soil around the rose cone to prevent it from blowing. So I usually just avoid the cone altogether because it's the soil that works.
Okay. And it sounds like you almost can't over-mulch a tea rose.
I don't think you can. The trick is mulching it and putting the soil on late and then going through this process of taking it off early in the spring, say sometime around March and April, because you don't want it to initiate new growth while still under the soil.
Now, something else a lot of people are starting to think about right now are bulbs. What kinds of bulbs can we plant in the fall?
As far as spring flowering bulbs, we can plant things like tulips, daffodils, crocuses, grape hyacinths. We typically like doing that sometime in October, although they should be coming in the garden centers, I think, in September, so you can buy those. We typically wait until about October. If we plant those too early, like in September, and if we have a really nice long fall, they may sprout above ground level in the fall. That's not a good thing. So we typically wait and do it in October. And when you're planting things like tulips and daffodils, you typically want to plant those in groups or clusters so they're more visually appealing. So you might have, for example, like 10 or 15 or more tulips in a cluster. The same with the daffodils. With the crocuses, they're smaller plants. The same with the grape hyacinths. You may want to plant like 25, 50 in a cluster so you get a much better display in the spring.
Now, we start to see those bulbs at garden centers right now. Mm-hmm. If you buy them now, what do you need to do to store them?
I would just buy them and then store them in a cool, dry place. I'd probably put them in the garage or maybe the porch or a shed. Just leave them there. They should be fine. And plant them probably sometime in October.
Is there anything special we need to think about when we're selecting sites for those bulbs?
Make sure it's a well-drained soil. They don't like wet, poorly drained sites. Also make sure most of those get at least several hours of sun, because those are our food storage organs. And when they're done blooming, the foliage has to get enough sun where it can manufacture food and then store that food back in the bulb. So if it doesn't do that, if it can't store enough food, then it may not bloom in the following year. So make sure it gets plenty of sun, too.
Well, I know we'll probably talk about that in the spring as well. But after the flower has bloomed and died, what do you need to do to make sure that the plant can store as much energy as it can?
Make sure you don't cut back the foliage prematurely. Because after blooming it, there's about a 4 to 6 week period there when the foliage is still green, manufacturing food, and then sending food back to the bulb. So make sure you don't cut it back prematurely. You know, some people get concerned about it being there. It's kind of in the way of things. But just ignore it. Just leave it there. And when it turns brown in a few weeks, you can cut it off.
Do you have to be careful to make sure to cut off the flower so it doesn't go to seed?
It's real important with the tulips. The tulips tend to be short-lived in that they bloom reliably for maybe 3 to 5 years. And then after that, they just send up foliage. And with the tulips, you want to make sure as soon as they're done blooming that you snap off the seed head because you don't want the plant wasting energy on that seed pod. With the other plants like daffodils, it's not as critical. If you do it, fine. If you don't get to it, don't worry about it.
So you said tulips bloom 2 to 5 years?
Well, 3 to 5 years reliably, okay. Right. They just go downhill very rapidly. And when they get to a certain size, as far as a bulb size, they're so small they can no longer bloom. They send up these large floppy leaves, but they have no blossom. And so when that point is reached, you just dig them up, toss them, and replant.
How long do daffodils last?
If they have a good site, they can be there for many, many years, 15, 20, 25 years. So much more vigorous, more long-lived.
I know that particularly in some gardens and public places, they'll dig up the bulbs every spring after the tulips have bloomed. Is there any reason you should dig up your bulbs?
Not really. They do it because they want a perfect display every spring. And if they didn't do that, you might have a few that don't bloom the next year, and they don't want that. They want something that's perfect, and so they typically replant every year.
All right, you couldn't take calendar pictures then. If
right, correct.
All right, it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes from Iowa State University, and we'll be taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, and I'm sorry, I know this will be in your head all day long.
I'm dreaming, all alone I'm scheming, scheming to get you out here, my dear.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, and it is Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture. We've been talking about perennials and bulbs and getting ready for next spring, and we're ready to take your calls. You can give us a call about anything that's going on in your yard or garden. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email from Talk of Iowa at I or to Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. And we have Jennifer on the line in Ames. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a flower bed in my front yard, and several years ago I had to dig up all of my irises because I had some borers get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I replaced some of my white ones with some colored ones because it was all white before. None of the colored ones have ever bloomed. I was wondering if there was something I should have done or should do to the irises to make them bloom.
No, are they in full sun?
Yes, they are.
And well-drained soils?
Yes, and all the white ones are still blooming.
Okay. Also, with the blooming iris, we also make sure that the rhizomes are near the surface of the soil so they're not planted too deeply?
I think so.
Okay. If it's planted the same as your others, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be blooming.
There's no reason, really.
Right. Well, unless, especially if your white irises are blooming. You also need to make sure that you haven't applied a lot of nitrogen fertilizer to the area.
No, I haven't.
Okay, because that would have probably affected your white irises as well. Sometimes too much nitrogen promotes a lot of lush growth, but no blooms. But and how long ago did you plant these?
Like 5 or 6 years.
Oh, it's plenty of time for them to adjust.
So I think I'd be inclined to dig them up and toss them.
Yeah.
Get some new ones.
They sound like duds. They sound like duds.
And try again next year, because they should. If they have a good site, they get plenty of sun, they've been there for several years, I can't think of a good reason why they shouldn't. Therefore, I would basically dig them up and toss them.
And you should give them a couple of years to get adjusted to the site. They sometimes won't bloom the first year after planting, but by that second or third year, they should be blooming just as well as your white ones.
Okay. I figured they probably were duds by now, but I thought I'd see if there was anything I should have done to replace them.
You were very patient, and you did everything correctly. It's time to try something else.
All right, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up we have Heidi in Johnston. Hello, Heidi.
Hi. I have a question about daffodils. I live in new construction, and I have really heavy clay soil, but I was thinking about planting daffodils. Would they survive in a site like that?
They're pretty adaptable. Mm-hmm. That's not their best site, but they're pretty adaptable. I think they'll be okay. Now, if you're doing a large planting bed, what I'd probably suggest is if you have an opportunity to get some compost or some other organic matter, bring that into the site, and then work in, let's say, 1 or 2 inches into the existing soil, and then plant. That would be the best, if you can do that. But you want to do a big, large planting area, not just individual holes. So if you're doing like a flower bed, I would bring in some compost, work it into the existing soil, and then plant.
Okay. I have another question. I have this area, and I did Roundup, and I put in like a perennial prairie flower mix. And I got a ton of foxtail this year, and I pulled out a lot, but is there a way to get rid of foxtail besides just rounding up all the time? It seemed like that made the problem worse.
Well, typically when you're trying to establish native grass and wildflowers, the first year, one of the most critical things the first year is to go out there periodically, about once a month or so, and cut off the vegetation about maybe 10 inches above the ground. And the reason that you do that is the weeds grow very, very quickly. The native plants that first year grow very, very slowly. So if you cut off the area about 10 inches above the ground, you're not harming the native plants because they're shorter than that, but you're preventing the weeds from crowding out the native plants and preventing them from producing seed. So if you do that about once a month or so, that should be a fairly good environment for the native grasses and wildflowers. And then the following year, you want to go out there typically before anything comes up and cut it off near ground level and get rid of all that dead debris, and then maybe cut it once or twice in the spring and then leave it at that. So by hopefully the end of the second year, the native grass and wildflowers will be well established and starting to look like something. The first year, you go out there and it looks like a weed patch because the native plants are so small, you can barely see them. And the weeds being weeds, they grow very quickly and take over. So you have to just kind of cut them or mow them. But after the second year, that should look like it should, as far as native plants, native flowers, native grasses.
And the native plants can then start to compete well against the weeds and do fine for you.
Okay, super. That was very helpful.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Heidi. And Richard, do you have advice for Heidi and for other people on how to cut 10 inches off the ground?
I know.
Well, if you have a weed whacker, they kind of work okay if it's not a huge area. But you go out with one of those and just kind of cut it at a 10-inch height.
Yeah, our lawnmowers won't go that high.
No. Yeah, no.
I suppose it's a good opportunity to wield a machete.
That would be a possibility, too.
Oh, wear protective clothing or something.
The number to call if you have a question, 866-780-9100. You can also send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. And Mark is on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I had a question about fall garlic, how deep to plant, when to plant, the spacing, how much mulch to put on. I've never done garlic before. I want to try it this fall.
I would plant that probably sometime in mid to late September, early October. And I would plant it just like you would an onion, maybe a half inch deep or so, inch deep. And then I would cover that with straw, several inches of straw, probably sometime in late October or so, early November, and then remove that early next spring. As far as spacing in the row, probably around 3 to 4 inches.
And do you fertilize in the fall with garlic?
I would not. You could do it early in the spring.
In the spring. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mark. And when would you then be able to harvest garlic?
Hopefully, if you do that in late September, October, probably next August or September.
All right. We've got Jerry on the line next. Hello, Jerry.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I was wondering when a person should plant the white variety of sweet clover.
In what environment? In the lawn or?
I have a couple of old fair-sized garden spots, and I'm tired of the garden, and I just want to plant some sweet clover. And also I have a fair-sized pond in the backyard with one colony of honeybees sort of hidden in there, and that's my interest in sweet clover.
So you want some clover honey.
So not white clover, but sweet clover, correct?
Well, there's yellow sweet clover and white sweet clover. There's two varieties of it. The white sweet clover is the best for bees.
I'm not quite sure on sweet clover as far as the best time to plant that. I would guess spring, but I'm not positive on that.
I see. Do you have any idea where a person can get it?
I guess I would try maybe at a farm co-op or something of that nature.
I won't need very much, and I don't know if they can provide a small quantity or not, but I guess I could try that.
Okay, if not there, then there are some catalog sources. I would try Johnny's out of Maine. They sell garden and flower vegetable seeds, but they also have some legumes and ground covers. And they might have smaller quantities if you want smaller quantities. So Johnny's out of Maine.
All right. And they probably have a website as
well.
Yes,
they do.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
All right, Jerry, thank you so much for your call and good luck with that. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture. We're going to take a break here, and then we will continue answering your questions about your yard and garden. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nevy, and I'm here today along with Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And we're taking your calls at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have a number of emails, one of them from Lana, who sent in an email from Iowa City. She says, I'd like to ask a question about the Hosta X virus. Mm-hmm. Will I be able to save my other neighboring hostas?
Yes, you can. Obviously, eliminating plants with a Hosta X virus is probably your primary concern because you don't want it to spread. But if you catch it early, it doesn't mean that it's going to spread to other neighboring hostas. Keep an eye on them. Certainly keep an eye on it. It's a very distinctive virus. It causes unusual markings on the leaves. And if it possibly does spread, which I don't think it will, then you can remove those plants and catch it early enough, and it shouldn't be an issue in the garden.
And what does it do to hostas?
Well, it causes unusual streaking or veination patterns, which are actually not entirely unattractive, but it can lead to kind of puckering and death of certain of the foliage. So it's often happens in propagation and during division. So it's something that's kind of in the nursery industry that has mostly spread it. And it's been let go because it looks like a variegation pattern, at least initially.
Okay.
Which is kind of tricky to catch it early.
So it might be kind of pretty and then your plants die.
Yeah.
All right.
That's the set.
Leah is on the line from Fairfax. Hello, Leah.
Yes. Good morning. We have several fountain grasses that are beautiful, but they've just gotten out of hand. When is the best time to divide them or plant them elsewhere?
Perennial fountain grass?
Yes.
I would do that in the spring. Just as signs of life appear, mm-hmm. new shoots coming out of the ground, and if it's a big clump, it may take some effort
right.
to dig it up, but I would dig it up and divide it, and if you have more than you want, either give some away or compost them.
Okay. What about the tops that are on? Sometimes I like to leave them in the winter because mm-hmm. they really are beautiful. But should they be cut off more in the fall or spring?
Well, you can wait until spring to cut those off.
Yeah, most of the ornamental grasses have some winter appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not great, but it provides some interest.
Movement. Yeah.
Right, it does provide interest. So we typically would like to leave those in until basically spring.
Okay, some of them are colorful, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right,
Thank
Leah,
you.
Thanks a lot for your call. Is there any kind of a problem with some of those large ornamental grasses spreading out of hand and becoming really invasive species?
There are a couple that tend to be invasive. For example, blue lime grass,
yeah.
Ribbon grass. Those tend to be quite aggressive.
You see miscanthus in the roadsides. It's a certain type of miscanthus. But all three of these grasses aren't necessarily commonly sold at garden centers.
Not anymore.
Right. So, yeah.
The biggest problem with some of the other ones is that they get to be rather large clumps. And so if you want to move them or divide them, that can be a chore because they're big. And that can be some work. In fact, it may be a two-person job.
Right.
So
And dividing a big clump of grasses, I've used an axe before.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it took.
Wow.
So, yeah.
not a delicate operation.
Not a delicate operation when they get really big.
All right. Marty is on the line next from Mitchellville. Hello, Marty.
Hello there.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have two questions. Number one, we have developed, because of so much rain this summer, a lot of water grass in our yard. We have clover and dandelions, and it seemed to rain so much that we never thought it was a good time to spray for them. And now I bet half our grass is water grass. And I'm wondering, is it too late in the year to spray for those now, or should we wait until spring?
Okay, water grass is kind of a vague term.
It's a broad blade grass.
Okay. I think most people, when they say or use that term, they're referring to crab grass.
Oh, well, that could be,
which
too.
Is a annual grass, a very common lawn weed. It has a very broad leaf blade.
Yes.
It's kind of a light green color.
Mm-hmm.
After a rain or early in the morning, it tends to stay wet for a long period of time, much longer than bluegrass. So that's where the term water grass comes in. It's kind of wet.
That's what we have, and we have a lot of it. We live in the country, okay. And we have a large yard, and we have a lot of it.
So if it's crabgrass, the good news is that crabgrass is an annual grass. And the crabgrass is going to die on its own with the first hard freeze in the fall. Okay? So in the meantime, we just tolerate its presence, keep it well mowed, and it will die, typically in October, with the first hard freeze. So I wouldn't do anything this year as far as trying to spray it. As far as controlling it next year, all you really have to do is put on a pre-emergent herbicide or a so-called crabgrass preventer in the spring. And typically here in central Iowa, that should be applied sometime between, let's say, mid-April and May 1st, so somewhere in that time frame. And the pre-emergent herbicide will prevent the crabgrass seed from germinating next spring. It won't be there. But at this point, nothing really to do. Just keep it well mowed, tolerate it, and it will be dead soon.
All right, Marty, thanks a lot for your call. And Mary's on the line now from Dyersville. Hello, Mary.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a large old trumpet vine by my back porch, but it is going crazy, mm-hmm. and the runners are underneath a wooden deck
Wow.
that I have on the ground and in that same area. How do I get rid of all of the shoots and actually the original vine?
Oh, so you want to kill the whole thing?
Yeah, that'd be okay, too.
Okay, well, that's probably your two options. One is to kill it, and the other is to just leave it go. As far as killing it, it's going to require persistence and patience.
Yeah, keep those mm-hmm. pruners sharp.
It may take a year or two, possibly longer, which is, so it's a long struggle. What I would suggest is, if you want to kill the whole thing, is that you may want to wait and start this process next spring.
Okay.
And what you want to do is let the plant leaf out
mm-hmm.
fully in the spring, probably go out sometime maybe late May or early June, and cut off the major stems about mm-hmm. a foot or so above the ground, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then take the herbicide Roundup
okay.
and buy the concentrate and use as is. Don't dilute it with water. Use the concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
Pour a small amount in a container. And then take like a foam-type paintbrush and dip the paintbrush in the Roundup and then dab that on the cut surface. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do that as soon as you cut off the stem. That live tissue will absorb the Roundup. Roundup is systemic, so it should move down into the root system. The unfortunate thing is you're only going to kill a small part of the root system.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to re-sprout. Okay? And it's going to do this for probably a year or two. And so it does require patience, persistence. So what I would do is probably a month after that, after mm-hmm. that first time,
mm-hmm.
I'd probably go back to my stem and cut off maybe 2 or 3 more inches of that stem.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a fresh cut. You have live tissue again. Put the Roundup on again and mm-hmm. keep on doing that as long as you possibly can. And later on, if suckers come up in the yard, and you might see suckers coming up in the yard, various locations, let them come up a little bit and then cut them off and put Roundup on them too. But
okay.
it's gonna take persistence. The trumpet vine is a very tough plant. It's a pretty plant when it's blooming.
It's beautiful.
But it doesn't know its bounds.
It knows
very well.
No bounds.
It knows no bounds, right.
What kind of damage would that do to Mary's deck if she didn't do anything about it at all?
The stems do get quite woody on
it. It's a woody vine, so it could maybe push up some of the pieces in the deck, damage it possibly, yes. So
it would take several years for it to do that, but it's definitely a woody plant, so it's like a tree in a sense growing up, you know, between the slats of a deck or something like mm-hmm. that.
I've heard a number of people wondering how to get rid of trumpet vines. Do you sort of shudder when you see them sold? Because you guys are the ones that get the questions several years down the road when people say, wait a minute, this isn't what I thought I was buying.
Yeah, people see it and they like it when it's in bloom.
It is very
attractive. The two questions that I commonly get are, why doesn't it bloom? Because oftentimes they're kind of slow to bloom. And then the other question, which is more common, how do I kill it? So
right.
it's people don't realize that it really does sometimes become a problem in the landscape.
And I think most of them just need to think of a big, sturdy place to put it. I mean, you know, that maybe it's not going to get out of its bounds as quickly. And then it can be a wonderful thing in the landscape.
You see them a lot on light poles.
Mm-hmm. Light poles, or like I've even seen them on the base of those old kind of windmills and at mm-hmm. farms. And those kind of locations, they're actually pretty good because they can cover quickly and bloom and attract lots of butterflies and hummingbirds and other nice things.
And it has very few problems as far as
pest-wise. No pest or disease, so.
Well, it sounds like it's impossible to kill almost.
It is. Almost.
So for those
patience,
of us with brown thumbs. And there's no way to get rid of it without chemicals?
Boy.
You can keep cutting it
and keep
pruning it.
Right.
But it's that storage root system. It's got so much stored up that, you have to be more persistent than the plant.
Right. If you keep on cutting it off, you would eventually deplete all the stored food in the roots, and it would eventually give up. But I'm guessing that might be three, 4, or 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to take longer.
All right. So when you're getting a trumpet vine, it's like getting a parrot. This is a lifelong commitment, right?
Just be careful. Consider all the good things and the bad things.
All right. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. And with me today are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture at ISU. Again, that number is 866-780-9100. And let's take another email here. Somebody wrote in and wants to know, what perennials have the best chance of not being eaten by deer? We have a sunny, shady area.
Mm-hmm. So
sunny and shady.
Okay.
And they also like to attract birds. And they wanted to know if there's a good resource they can look up as well.
Well, there's nothing that we consider totally deer-proof. If the deer are incredibly hungry, they will probably try or eat anything. Richard talked about daffodils earlier. Daffodils are a good bulb that are usually considered toxic or poisonous, so most things leave them alone. So that might be something to consider. Other things when I recommend perennials that are kind of less prone to deer problems, think of those things that are fuzzy foliage like lamb's ear or smelly, something like Russian sage. So those are a couple of options maybe in the sun. And for the shade, sometimes I think of those things that are also, once again, fuzzy. There's toad lily or poisonous, something like lobelia.
There is a good publication by the University of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go onto Google and type in the phrase plants not favored by deer,
Yeah. That
should bring it up, and it gives you a pretty good list. Always keep in mind, though, that hungry deer will eat almost anything. So even something on that list, if they're hungry, they're starving, they might eat it. So.
And the deer in Wisconsin or the deer in Iowa aren't reading these publications.
No, they're not.
So they might be a little bit different. So, but it gives you a number of options.
A good starting point.
Yeah.
All right. Kathy is on the line in Andalusia. Hello, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'd like to know what the best time of year is to prune my holly bushes and how much I can prune.
Okay, as far as pruning them, I would prefer to do that in the spring, like in April would be a good time. Now, you could go out like in early December and snip off a little bit for indoor decorations. Mm-hmm. You can do that. That's perfectly fine. But as far as a more general pruning, basically in the spring.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Next up, we have Jane in Ames. Hello, Jane.
Hi. I'm calling in regards to I planted some new river birches in the spring, and we had plenty of water over this summer, but I was wondering about preparing them for the winter to make sure that they'll make it through the winter as far as groundwater and things.
Well, I think the most important thing is to go out there and check them and water them as needed. They've had plenty of moisture to this point, but it's gotten dry recently. So I would go out there, use your eyes and use your fingers and kind of poke around the ground. If the ground is getting dry, go ahead and water them and keep on watering those through September, October into November. That's the main thing. You shouldn't have to water that often because it's getting cooler, the day's shorter, so you shouldn't have to do it that often. But make sure that you keep on watering because the roots of the tree keep on growing until the ground freezes. So keep on doing that.
Okay, can I ask?
They've been kind of spoiled by all the rain, so.
Okay. I have a river birch, and it has four, I'll say, call them trunks,
mm-hmm.
you know. And two of the trunks came out and leafed out really nice. The other two shot out, like, on the existing limbs. They shot out new, like, suckers, like, new limbs. And the actual limbs that were there, the thin limbs, didn't leaf out. So should I wait till the spring and see if they're going to leaf out, or should I cut those back this fall and let those new suckers come out as the limbs?
I would wait and see what happens next spring and then go from there. Anything that doesn't leaf out next spring, cut out. But just okay. leave it there and reevaluate the situation next spring.
Okay, like April, May type of thing?
Oh, probably late May.
Oh, okay.
Give them all the chance in the world to leaf out, but if they haven't leafed out by the end of May, most likely they're dead and you can prune them out.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Jane. And we've got Joe on the line next in Solon. Hello, Joe.
Hello. I would like to know how to get rid of, what's the best way to get rid of poison ivy, multifloral rose, and Canadian thistle, and when is the best time to get rid of them?
Those are all three kind of tough plants to get rid of.
Where are they growing?
In my yard and in the back on my field. I have 17 acres of pasture, and I have the multiflora rose and the Canadian thistle back there, and the poison ivy is around my house.
Right. Well, as far as the poison ivy, you basically have two options. One is to dig them up. That's a possibility if they're small plants. The other option, again, would be Roundup, where mm-hmm. you cut them off and, again, apply Roundup directly to them, the cut surface. So you have that option, either digging them up or using Roundup on them. As far as the thistles and the multiflora rose, if you have large numbers of these, I would probably suggest calling Agronomy Extension. We have individuals there that can answer that. They deal with weeds and weed control in large areas like pastures and places like that. The phone number for Agronomy Extension is 515-294-1923. So 294-1923. And that's the number for Agronomy Extension. And in that office, there are one or two weed control people.
Okay. In terms of the poison ivy, mm-hmm. you have to cut it? You can't just spray it on the leaf?
You can just spray it on the leaf, or even sometimes I've recommended just painting it on the leaf, and that works as well. It's usually a little bit faster and more effective if you actually cut it and then you know, brush it on that cut end. But be very careful, though, in removing what you've cut off and try not to touch that or, you know, touch it through a bag of some sort, or
right,
gloves.
If you have small plants, you can spray the small plants or you can dab it on with a foam-type paintbrush. If it's a larger plant, your best bet is to cut it off and then apply the Roundup directly to the cut surface.
Okay, and what time of year is best?
What time of year as far as doing this? You want to do this during the growing season when the plants are actively growing. So typically, late May, June, July would be the best times to do it. August is fine, too. But you don't want to do it in the fall or real early in the spring.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Joe. And I'm going to try to squeeze in a couple of questions from email before we have to go. Pat from Manchester sent an email. Can you transplant older allium bulbs? Also, mm-hmm. I started some from seed this spring and need to plant them. They're quite small. Where and how should I plant them?
Yes, you can transplant old allium bulbs. The trick is finding them this time of year because they don't have any foliage. So I would wait to transplant any kind of bulb until the foliage starts to yellow, then you know where the bulb is and you can just pick it up and then move it and replant very quickly. And as far as those new bulbs, you can plant those as well. It probably will take them a couple of years before they're large enough to be of a bloomable size. But once again, just a couple of inches down below the surface of the soil in a really sunny, well-drained location, and they should, in a couple of years, fill in and start blooming. Alliums are pretty tough.
All right. And Julie sent us an email. She says they have a new pond and would like to introduce some cattails and maybe big and little blue stem in and around it. Any suggestions on how or when to do that?
Well, you could purchase plants through some of the nurseries or garden centers or catalogs. And if you purchase plants, I'd put those in the ground basically in the spring.
And if for cattails, you can also maybe purchase those in containers as well. And depending on the size of this pond, if it's like a water garden, we often put those in containers in a water garden or plant them along the edge.
Can you collect your own cattail seeds if you see them growing in the ditch?
You could, but it'd be far better just to go out there and maybe dig up the actual rhizomes and transplant them that way. The seeds would be more problematic, difficult to do, but you can actually dig up those rhizomes and transplant those fairly easy.
All right, and we're almost out of time, but we also have an email that somebody would like to plant black currant bushes next spring. Can you recommend a variety and growing conditions?
There are several black currants. I guess I would look at some of the rust-resistant varieties like Crusader, Coronet. And as far as growing them, a well-drained soil, fertile soil, partial to full sun.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Cindy Haynes, an associate professor in the Department of Horticulture. Thank you guys for your time today.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Russell Mansky in Ames today. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show, send us email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on Talk of Iowa, writing about the state. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.